From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, we continue our special programming today as we respond to news that President Joe Biden is not seeking re-election, and it has opened up the top of the ticket for the Democratic Party. Of course, as we've been discussing in the hours following that announcement yesterday afternoon, there was a rather rapid coalescing around Vice President Kamala Harris. It does not mean that this is a done deal, and there will be a lot to say about that this hour and more. But this is a chance to hear now from some Democrats, elected leaders, who have their own thoughts about where their party goes next here. And a big part of this story is that, yes, the top of the ticket is open, but there was a lot of concern that down-ballot races were affected, that this wasn't just a presidential race that was sort of in the balance with Joe Biden staying on the ticket. It was a down-ballot set of races that Democrats were very worried about losing. And so now, a lot of questions. And let me welcome our first couple of guests of the hour. Senator Sommer Brook, New York State Senator from District Number 55, is with us. Senator Brook, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
And joining us is Assemblymember Sarah Clark from District Number 136. Assemblymember Clark, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me as well.
Assemblymember Clark, did you have any surprise when you got, you probably got a text from someone. I just saw three words, Biden is out. That's what I saw in text message. I don't know how you saw the news, but I wonder if it was any surprise to you.
Well, I actually saw the letter on social media and initially dismissed it because I went right to CNN and they hadn't put anything up yet. And I said, oh, it's just probably fake. And then within 3 minutes, obviously that all changed. So I had a little bit of a disbelief when I first read it and was, you know, I always try to fact check my news content that comes my way. But then it was a moment of, you know, I think there, particularly if you read the letter, I don't know if others were as moved by it as I was, but reading his letter really moved me, but also understood the sacrifice he was making at that moment. I think it was surprising, but not shocking, if that makes sense. And not a completely unexpected, but still, I did have a moment of, you know, really hoping that this leads to an enthusiasm that we have now seen since the announcement that I just really thought the Democrats needed this year.
Senator Brook, what did you think?
Yeah, similarly, you know, I think a lot of us, I mean, this has consumed, especially if you're in politics, but I think for a lot of folks, this has consumed our thoughts, it's consumed our conversations for the last couple of weeks. And so I think a lot of people thought something was going to happen. And I actually found out through a text message of just 2 exclamation points. And that actually told me, okay, something must have happened. And so then I went and started looking at the news. But I think my immediate thought, you know, share a lot of what Sarah said. But the immediate second thought was, what now? And so I think then we waited with bated breath, and luckily it wasn't too long to see, okay, is he going to endorse his vice president, who seemed like the very natural, most experienced person to be stepping into this nomination? And so then it was just overwhelm of excitement and enthusiasm because, you know, we've watched VP Harris over the last few years. She has an incredible professional career, and now we have a really strong, I think, top of ticket, not just for my own race in a down ballot race, but also for garnering enthusiasm for voters.
And the answer to the engineer, I think, is yes there, Rob. I'm sorry, my technology has been really wonky these 2 hours. But listeners, if you want to weigh in, you can continue to do that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Our guests are talking about an enthusiasm, you know, a surge in enthusiasm, energy. And you heard Senator Brook talking about this, the excitement that you've got a qualified VP who has this experience and who now looks ready to step into this. Let me read a little bit from what Graham Wood wrote in The Atlantic today under a piece titled, Democrats Are Making a Huge Mistake. And the subhead is, the error is not the choice of Kamala Harris. It is the sudden rallying behind her. Wood writes, quote, Yesterday, Joe Biden did the honorable thing after weeks of denying that anything had to be done at all. His announcement took his party by surprise. And now, in haste, the Democrats are making a colossal error and ensuring that they will reap as little advantage from Biden's decision as possible. The error is not the choice of Kamala Harris. It is the sudden rallying behind her, the torrent of endorsements, right after Biden's self-removal. Biden's senescence was only part of the party's crisis. The other part was the impression that Democratic politics felt like a game rigged by insiders to favor a candidate of their choice and to isolate that candidate from the risk associated with campaigning. For 27 minutes between the time Biden announced his withdrawal and the time he broke the seal on Harris' endorsements by bestowing his, the contest felt thrillingly, bracingly wide open. The Democrats should have kept it open all the way into the convention next month in Chicago. End quote. Senator Brooke, what do you make of that?
Well, I think from my perspective, I mean, I don't think anyone would say I'm some Democratic insider, and I promise you President Biden isn't calling me to ask me my opinion. Maybe someday he will, but for now I will, you know, happily represent my corner of Western New York. But, you know, I'm a voter, right? I am a Black woman. I am an elected office holder. And I think, you know, we have a vice president who, you know, I take a little issue with the thought that she hasn't been campaigning. She's been out campaigning, you know, since 2020, campaigning when she was campaigning as vice president, and obviously has been doing a lot for the ticket this year as well. And so, you know, I don't see it as a kind of coronation, because I don't believe I'm in a position to do that. But what I do see is that we have an incredibly experienced, qualified vice president who is already on this presidential ticket and was also a former presidential candidate, and I believe has what it takes to win. I also think that we have a chance to, you know, make history here in a very big way. And, you know, there's always a part of me that thinks, you know, there's always more criticism when there are people of color involved. And so, you know, that is, I think, to be expected. I think it will continue to happen. But I don't think it should take away from the fact that on a grassroots level, people are rallying around VP Harris. And I just want to give an example. I got a bunch of texts from a number of friends of mine last night to join a Zoom call of Black women to talk about how we might organize for Kamala. It was supposed to be about 1,000 people. And these were not party insiders. These were people from all over the country who had texted me, just friends of mine, barely in politics, and crashed the Zoom several times and ended up with 45,000 people from around the country on a grassroots level, just texting friends. That shows you that this isn't just some coronation. This is American voters excited and enthusiastic about what they believe and what I believe is a tremendous leader and a tremendous opportunity to prevent a second Trump presidency.
Okay. Assemblymember Sarah Clark, what do you make of Graham Wood's point that Democrats moved too quickly and should keep things open?
Well, I think anyone watching the timeline here, right? You said it in your intro. This is a short time for European campaigns, or a long time for European campaigns, but a very short window, very, very short window for American politics to run a campaign for president in 4 months. I think that if you look at the list of people who have come out and endorsed her, I bet if you had asked them a week ago who their front runner would have been, not all of them would have picked her. So I don't think you're getting a whole bunch of people who maybe, you know, if this were a year ago, maybe would be in a different place. But the reality is that they know she's absolutely ready to go day one. They know she has the experience and the record. And obviously the enthusiasm. I think we've all just been sort of under this cloud for a very long time of what it's going to look like in terms of turnout and enthusiasm, and particularly our young voters. And I have seen just a real, like Samar was mentioning, just a real huge groundswelling of support. We saw it in the Act Blue donations that are probably going to hit 100 million in the next 24 hours. I mean, that's unprecedented grassroots small donors who are ready, energized, and showing it both in their organizing already and in their donations.
But Assemblymember Clark, let me just push this a little bit here. I've seen the emails, especially since the debate when we've been having these conversations on this program. I see emails from Democrats almost daily, just, I think, flabbergasted at the idea that there are swing voters still, that there are people who are undecided between Biden and Trump, that there are tens of thousands of those people. They write to me all the time and they say things like, you know, he's a convicted criminal and he's a misogynist and he screws over workers and, you know, he's terrible. And how could this or how could that? But that ignores the fact that there absolutely are tens of thousands of Americans in roughly seven states who were undecided between Biden and Trump still, and maybe didn't like Trump, but felt like the Democratic Party was not bringing a new generation of leadership in or was putting forward a candidate who was unfit. And, you know, you don't have to like it, but those voters are going to have a huge say in who the next president is. It's not about what happens in California or, if sadly, in this state. It's about roughly seven states. Do you think those voters who maybe have had, at least according to polling, lukewarm at best feelings toward the vice president, they're going to vote for her in big enough numbers to swing the election? Do you believe that?
I do think her case is going to be made. She's going to make her case over the next few weeks, few months. But I also, as worried as I was, and I do know that there are voters still undecided, I was actually more concerned about people just not coming out to vote, right? So these are our younger generation of folks who were not really feeling it. And those are people who probably weren't necessarily undecided, but they kind of might have shrugged their shoulders and said, you know what, I'm just not going to show up. And I think there were lots of people like that. And from what I've heard from countless people across in terms of my friend group and whatever, is that now there's an excitement, not necessarily, you know, everyone was first to think of her or wanting it to be our VP Harris, but now are like, I'm in it. I'm so in it. I will be there. And I do think she has a record. I mean, Samra and I can talk for a long time about how she really set the groundwork for us to be able to do some really great childcare work in New York State. And it's because of her leadership and her ability to see that as a policy issue that was important to families across our country and put the groundwork in so that our state could follow the federal regulations and really get to the point where we're helping more and more families. So it's not, you know, I think there's a case to be made. I think as I've watched politics over the last 25 years that I've been involved, is, you know, I think that her negatives will be there and people will continue to push those out. And she hasn't really had to fight those as the top of the ticket yet. But I also think there's going to be a real opportunity to sell what she has done and her experience and the leadership that she's provided. And I think that that's going to make a huge impact on those undecided voters.
Senator Brooke, are you confident that those swing voters are going to go this way?
Yeah, I think a lot of good points were made. And, you know, I would add that, you know, in addition to having a track record and being able to point to, you know, wins that have helped, like, everyday people, these are things that are not theoretical wins. They have made a difference in people's lives. I think that's important. The other thing that I think about is when you think about voter enthusiasm, you also have to remember that you need enthusiasm to not just mobilize someone to the polls, but to mobilize the mobilizer, right? The you know, thousands and thousands of people who are going to be making calls, who are going to be writing cards, who, yes, will make their $3, you know, $4 donations, who will be calling their friends, who will be knocking on doors. And I mean, we know that the number one way to get someone out to vote is face-to-face contact. And so when you have enthusiasm, there's a multiplier effect, right, where it's not just potentially getting people excited to vote who may have stayed home, as Sarah said, but also they may now be enthusiastic enough to actually do more work to get even more people out. And so I think that that is another piece of the strategy that will work in our favor and that hopefully we'll see in the next couple days and couple weeks of just the sheer mobilization. And I know I said it before, but, you know, 44,000 people joining a virtual call just via texting each other, and that was before it really made it to the social media world. I mean, that's the kind of mobilization we're talking about, and you have to think each of them are out talking to others. And so it sounds simple, but that's how races are won, right, at the end of the day. So yes, I do.
Let me read a little bit of listener feedback. Randall says, Evan, I'm an old retired Reagan Republican, no longer associated with that party. I lived through the gutting of the U.S. manufacturing industry. As an engineer, it was awful. After watching the debate, it was more than clear that Biden needed to get out of the race. Sad but true. I don't know what happened to him over the last 3 years. As much as I am anti-progressive in my politics, Trump is an absolute disaster for this country. We must support Kamala, and she needs a conservative Democrat from a battleground state to balance the ticket. That is from Randall. All right. So, Assemblymember Clark, you get the first choice of a VP pick. How, number one, how important is this pick? How important is this pick? And number two, who should it be?
Well, I think there is a short list out there. I think it is important, right, to balance out a bunch of different. Democrats are herding cats. We all know this. We are a big tent party where we have lots and lots of different views and opinions that all fall under our tent, including the, your caller just now, who, you know, identifies as a Reagan Republican. So I do think she will look for some folks who do that. I think the short list has already been a couple governors from Kentucky, from Pennsylvania. I heard Pete Buttigieg as well. I already heard Gretchen say she's out, will not take it. Our governor from Michigan, who is also quite wonderful, but will co-chair her campaign, which, again, the power and the energy there is just something I'm riding very high on right now, after not feeling so great about this election cycle. So I do think she'll balance out some interests. I do think also, though, Joe Biden has a very, very strong record of the last 3.5 years that sort of cater to that middle of the road former Reagan Republicans, because he did so much on infrastructure, because he brought manufacturing back, because he has pushed and pushed and started to see inflation come down. He's done all of those kinds of things that I sort of think of those moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans really want to see. And that's a record Kamala gets to run on as well.
So I'm sorry. So who's the vice presidential choice?
Oh, I don't know. Governor Beshear, Governor Shapiro. I don't know. I'd take them either.
This is going to be just a very direct question. Can it be Governor Whitmer, and can a two-woman ticket win the White House?
She has already said no. She's already said she wouldn't accept it if offered. But of course, I would have loved it. I think it would have been a fantastic. But I share your concerns that maybe the country's not ready for that.
I don't know that they are or not. I think that we are going to see some legitimate examination of Vice President Harris's record. I think we're going to see some legitimate criticism. And then I think we're going to see some horrific racism and misogyny, and it's going to be pretty terrible. We're probably going to get all of that. Senator Brookhood, and who would you like to see? If you're on the phone, by the way, Bill, Carol, we'll take your calls in just a second. Senator Brook, who would you like to see on the ticket with Vice President Harris if she is the nominee?
I think the list that Sarah gave is a great list. I have to say, I was very impressed with Pete Buttigieg when he was running for president. I think he's been very impressive in his position now. I don't know what his aims are, but I think he would be a really interesting candidate for VP, and obviously part of the Biden administration as well. But I think, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, VP Harris is taking the time, and sounds like she's, you know, bringing on some great advisors. I'm sure she already has great advisors to think about the holes that exist, right? Where the vulnerabilities exist, and who will not only serve the American people, serve in this administration the best, but also mobilize folks in the places that we need to mobilize to make sure that we, you know, prevent another Trump presidency.
All right, Bill in Rochester. Hi, Bill, go ahead.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering what the reaction was to critics that suggest Vice President Harris may have played a big role in hiding President Biden's cognitive disorders for a longer period than it should have been. I was wondering what their comments were on that.
Thank you, Bill. Senator Brook, is the vice president culpable for helping mislead the public on the president's condition?
I am uncomfortable holding another grown adult's really culpable for someone else's actions, right? I mean, we're talking about the president of the United States of America, one of the most, you know, influential, powerful people, probably the most in this world. So I don't think any one person can really be culpable of hiding any other person's abilities. You know, he is out there. You know, we have seen him, the American people, and can judge it on our own. And so, I think he also had to come to this decision on his own. And there wasn't one person who was going to, again, force the president of the United States to do anything. So that's kind of where I fall on it. You know, I'm not president, but no one's really going to tell me what to do. I'm going to make the right decision for me and my health and myself and, you know, the folks I represent. And so I think that's what he did as well.
Okay. Assemblymember Clark, is the vice president culpable here?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't think we have all the information of we've all seen what we've seen with our eyes. We've seen the debate, the performance. We've seen some other missteps along the way, but we don't know his full health at this moment. So I think it's unfair. I see this time and time again, like Samer has mentioned, particularly where we like to hold women in various places responsible for things that other people have done or choices that they've made. And I've been clear for the last few months when asked about this, particularly over the last few weeks, is that this was Biden's decision. It was his decision along with his family. And we could never, ever, ever know who knew what when, but the responsibility ultimately lies with him and his family. And I think he did a selfless thing here. And that's what we should be really talking about and celebrating today.
All right, before I let the two of you go and welcome our next guest, Assemblymember Clark, what does this decision that the president made, and now with a new Democrat at the top of the ticket, what realistically will it do for those down ballot races?
I think it did exactly what Samra said it would do. The enthusiasm gap is a multiplier. We know that this is going to pull people out who were ready to just sit on the sidelines, maybe with voting, but definitely with volunteering, definitely with making calls, definitely with their pocketbook. And what we've seen is a real change there. I think it'll have a trickle-down effect. It'll be a groundswell. You know, we have the Equal Rights Amendment on the New York State ballot this year. What a better time to have both that and New York State on our ballot at the same time that we are voting on a historic presidential nominee with VP Harris leading the ticket and what that could mean. I see enthusiasm that will trickle down all our ballots. I think we'll do much better in our toss-up seats and those close races than we ever would have before. So I'm very, very excited.
Senator Brooke, what is going to be the lasting effect here? About 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think now is the time where we can pivot and actually focus on what's on the ballot. You know, not only do we have the ERA here in New York, but in a lot of states, this is a vote on reproductive rights, on reproductive freedom. And now we can actually focus on that message. And I think VP Harris is the best voice to help us lead us on that.
Senator Samer Brooke, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you so much.
Assemblymember Sarah Clark, thank you for making time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Listeners, we're talking about President Biden's decision not to run for re-election and what happens next at the top of the ticket, what the down ballot effects are, what that decision-making process should look like in this really extraordinary and essentially unprecedented time. And we're going to be welcoming other members of the state legislature. First, I want to play a short conversation I had this hour, earlier today, I should say, with Senator Jeremy Cooney, who could not join us live, but State Senator Cooney joined us to share his thoughts on the president's decision.
Always good to be with you.
Is this a situation where you feel like, you know, hard call, right call? How do you feel about the president's decision?
I think it was the right call, and it was a hard call. I mean, when you think about this, just take a step back, around, forget about the politics, just think about it as a human decision. To be able to make the decision to step away from arguably the most powerful role in the world, and all the cameras and all the spotlights, and to be able to say, you know what, this isn't about me. This is about defeating Donald Trump in November. I'm out. I can't imagine how difficult that decision was for the president to make. And I just have so much respect for him and really his entire long public service career. But just the ability in this moment to be able to say, let's win in November is just such a unique thing. And when you contrast it to what would happen on the other ticket, I mean, can we ever imagine Donald Trump giving up the spotlight, walking away from the role, if, you know, for the betterment of someone else or the country. He never would. He would never do that. He's an egomaniac. And so really this was a very difficult decision for Joe Biden to make, but I believe it will give us a pathway forward in November.
Well, let me just ask you a couple of questions, and we appreciate your time today. First, do you think now that the party has an opening, there should be an evaluation process, that multiple candidates should emerge, or do you think there should be a coalescing around the vice president?
Well, I personally am part of the coalescing around the vice president. I support Kamala Harris. I think she is certainly a very strong candidate, and I believe the right candidate for this moment. You know, to have the support of the current president, soon to be outgoing president, to have been in service, you know, whether we're talking about district attorney of San Francisco, the first woman, the first black woman to serve as attorney general of the state of California, member of the United States Senate, and now, of course, is our vice president. She's eminently qualified. And so I believe she is the right candidate for this time. That being said, we live in a democratic system. And if others are going to emerge, I've seen rumors, right? But I have not seen anyone put their name out there. But that's what the Democratic Convention process will be, right? Is that it's an opportunity for people to vote on the nominee. Obviously, I think a lot of speculation and attention will be spent on who the vice president will select as her vice presidential candidate and running mate. So I think there's going to be a lot of excitement, certainly in the next few weeks as we get ready to go to Chicago. I am a delegate. Previously was a Biden delegate, and I would have voted for Joe Biden, as I told you on your show a few weeks ago. I would have voted for Joe Biden if he were still our candidate. But I will be in Chicago, and I'm excited about coalescing around the Democratic values and making sure we do everything in our possible to beat Donald Trump.
All right, lastly, in the fall of 2019, Kamala Harris, Senator Harris then, was near the top or at the top of Democratic primary polling, and she didn't even make it to Iowa. She did not have a chance to even carry a state in her own party's primary. So now this election, as you know, is not about really anything other than swing voters in seven states. And I think sometimes Democrats forget that there are tens of thousands of people who were on the fence between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. They don't have to like it, but that is a reality. And now those tens of thousands of people in those seven states have to decide if Vice President Harris is someone they want to vote for. Her polling hasn't been good. She has not been successful in the Democratic primaries in 2019, 2020. Why is she going to win these states?
Well, let's not forget that Joe Biden was previously a presidential candidate as well, and he didn't win a state in the primary process prior to his campaign, successful campaign in 2020. You know, I think, look, we as a country have come a long way. We've known now Vice President Kamala Harris more than we knew her as a member of the Senate. We know her as a leader. We know her as a strong advocate for women's productive health. We know her as a strong advocate for justice. We know her as a strong believer in environmental justice. And so, you know, having her at the top of the ticket now in 2024 is very different than in 2020. That being said, I think that she has an opportunity to build coalitions with her selection of her running mate in those critical states of Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan and others, right? This is an opportunity to bring someone else along who can be an equally as exciting candidate. And I also think, for what it's worth, is that we know how much is on the line right now. And I think we have seen that in the last 24 hours. I mean, Evan, here we are on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of the summer, and people are glued to their phones, watching television, making donations online. I think 44,000 black women were on a mobilization call last night. I've got a call tonight with the Indian American community to support Kamala Harris. There has been more presidential campaign activity in the last 24 hours and excitement than I have seen in the past 2 months. And I think that's because, and I hope that's because, we realize we don't have time to have a goodbye party for Joe Biden. Because if we do that, we're going to be having a goodbye party to the White House in January. We need to get to work. And we have, you know, just a few days, few weeks before the Chicago convention. And then right after that, we got to turn around and mobilize again in these swing states, as you said, to make sure we bring the vote out for whomever is our nominee. Although I do hope and expect it will be Vice President Kamala Harris.
That is State Senator Jeremy Kuding joining us. And now joining us live in studio is New York State Assemblymember Jen Lunsford from District Number 135. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Always happy to be here.
Welcome to Assemblymember Harry Bronson, who is on the line with us. Assemblymember Bronson, thanks for making time.
Thanks so much for having me on, Evan.
Assemblymember Damon Meeks as well. Assemblymember Meeks, thank you for making time.
Thank you, Evan. Thanks for having me.
I don't know, Assemblymember Lunsford, if a few weeks ago you would have predicted this when others were. But now that it has happened, what's your mindset?
I am of the mindset that we need to support whoever our Democratic candidate is. I'm perfectly happy if that's Kamala Harris. I know that Joe Biden did not make this decision lightly, but this is about the soul of our nation, and I don't think that that's an understatement. We need to do everything we can to make sure that we put someone in office who's going to accept the outcome of the election, that isn't a convicted felon, that is going to uphold the laws of our country, that's going to respect the Constitution. And I think Kamala Harris ticks every one of those boxes.
You heard your colleague in the Senate talking about the fact that until 2020, Joe Biden had not won a primary. And past performance does not always guarantee a future success. However, do you think there is a tight enough message, and can she define herself knowing that there are caricatures out there, there will be attacks coming all over the place, and it's really about those seven states and those that small number of swing voters?
I think the flip side of having very high name recognition is having caricatures. If you want people who don't know anything about you, then you're going to find someone no one knows anything about. So you need to make sure that people are remembering that she was a prosecutor, that she was an attorney general, that she did incredible things for the LGBTQ community, that she is an outspoken advocate for women's reproductive health, that she is a lawyer and a fabulous debater, and I think that she's a very strong candidate. Last time she was running in a very large field, and I think comparing her prior to holding the vice presidency, which, you know, helps with your name recognition a tad, against a very large field of people who were at the same level of government as her, it's not really a apples and oranges situation.
Okay, but what is the downside to saying no one is going to endorse until the convention and we're just going to open this thing up and whoever really wants it is in?
There lies dragons. That is madness. We need
it's madness.
It's madness. We need to coalesce as soon as possible behind a candidate. It is July. And I know that people don't really start paying attention to elections until August or September, but people generally run for president for 2 years. You have a
That's not a healthy thing.
It's not, but it's how it works. And the reality of trying to get together a campaign in this amount of time, if you're going to delay it even a few weeks, that is years in campaign time. We need to start running now.
Let me ask Assemblymember Meeks if you feel the same way.
Absolutely. I believe that we need to, lock in with a candidate and put full support behind that candidate. I'm one who worked on political campaigns, presidential campaigns in the past, and remember the days of going to swing states like Pennsylvania and Ohio. And there's a lot of work that has to go in on the ground in order to assure a victory. So I definitely feel that that's necessary, and we don't have time to lose in this space.
Do you want it to see? Do you want the vice president to be that person?
You know, when I look at that and just look at the history of, you know, when the president steps down, the next person in line is often the vice president. And looking at how things are going right now, I think New York State historically, we sort of tend to set the bar as it relates to national politics. In 1917, women received the right to vote here in New York State, and it was in 1920 that it happened nationally. And, you know, we have our first woman governor, and I think that, the United States will be next.
Assemblymember Bronson. Assemblymember Bronson, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think I just want to be clear about my gratitude to President Biden. An extraordinary decision, very difficult decision to give up what is arguably the most powerful position on earth. And it exemplifies what he's done throughout his entire career. and that is he has always put the American people first. He's put this country first. And I think that was revealed in what must have been one of the hardest, if not the hardest decision he has ever made. That being said, his endorsement of Kamala Harris, I think, is powerful. I have also announced that I'm proud to endorse Kamala Harris. I'm a delegate at large. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been having hypothetical questions among various delegates. Yesterday, those conversations via phone got very real. And I wanted to listen to other delegates and listen to constituents. I heard from constituents. And ultimately, as I think Assemblymember Lunsford and others on your earlier show have said, there is no question Kamala Harris is ready to be president of the United States. She's an accomplished prosecutor, an attorney general, a senator, at almost 4 years as vice president. She's been an active part of this administration, a little bit more than some vice presidents have, and she's ready. I think we need to learn from our mistakes in the past. We have, I think, in the modern era, had four open conventions as Democrats. We lost every single one of those campaigns in that November, including one that's most notable, Lyndon B. Johnson, in 1968. And, you know, some people have said, you know, this is a coronation. And it's not. It's a deliberative process. The same people who would make the decision at the convention are the people who are deliberating and making the decision right now. And that's going to be the delegates. That's how our system works. So I don't think we need to wait. I don't think we have the time to wait. Kamala needs to get her message out. She needs, as she said, to earn the vote and the trust of the delegates and then the American people. So I think we move forward, but time is of the essence, and I think we need to make a decision very quickly.
Let me read three listener comments. We'll get some feedback, then we'll take some phone calls here. Jillian in Irondequoit says, President Biden is courageous for this decision? Baloney. He never should have ran in the first place. As for the VP having to earn her place, what else would she have to do? A term of vice presidency and campaigning in 2020? Enough. Energy is better spent on the new campaign. I'm breathing a sigh of relief here and finally energized to be active in the Harris campaign. That is from Jillian. Jim in Greece wrote in to say he thinks the choice of the VP is a big one, and he wants to know if the panel would support Adam Kinzinger, former Republican congressman who was an anti-Trump congressman who lost his seat in Wisconsin because he would not support President Trump out of principle. Jim in Greece thinks that would be a great choice to show crossing the aisle. However, we've got Dell. Dell writes to say, I absolutely disagree that a centrist Democrat or even a Republican would help the ticket. As your panelists have pointed out, the best chance Democrats have right now is to inspire and build enthusiasm. A moderate pick in a campaign already bogged down by criticisms of stagnation and complacency would only quell the hope and promise of the first ever woman of color in charge of a major political party. That is from Dell. All right, Assemblymember Lunsford, you want to start here. Adam Kinzinger, Republican, VP on the ticket. What do you think?
So you have $100 million in his pocket? Because that would be really helpful right now. But I don't think so. And I think this illustrates exactly what I've been saying over the past several weeks, that there is no single Democrat the party of AOC and Joe Manchin will all line up behind. There's problems with everyone. We eat our own for breakfast. That's what Democrats do. So the idea that there was ever going to be one unifying banner where we all went, yay, that person, that was never going to happen. People have been having these conversations in echo chambers where they all think they've got the pulse of the party. This party has 17 pulses, and someone's going to be unhappy with no matter who the choice is. At this point, we have someone with the name recognition, with the war chest, with the campaign infrastructure, with the experience to do the job, who is ready to run right now, and that is our best hope.
Okay, I mean, I still feel like I don't know where your heart is on a VP choice. Does it matter that much?
The VP choice is super important, yes, of course. I think at this point, there's a lot of good options. I mean, I think in reality, you're going to end up seeing someone like Governor Shapiro. I think that's going to be, you're looking for high-profile, safe choices that counteract the fact, in reality, that we're dealing with a black woman. And that's
so
going to be
white man.
A white man. I mean, that's I don't want to be like that. But there's a lot of people who are going to have to do the thing that they do every time, which say, I'd vote for a woman, but not that woman. I'd vote for a black person, but not that black person. That is where we live. And I wish it wasn't. But we're going to have to find a 25-year-old Joe Biden, if we can, to run behind her.
All right. Before I turn to your colleagues, let me just ask you one other line of thinking here, because you have, as far as you've ever been on this program, you are not paralyzed by fear about speaking your mind on what you think should happen. Is that fair? Okay,
that's fair.
And my read on politics, as lay person as it is that fear can paralyze. And what we saw after the debate was a few, I think, brave Democrats came out right away and said, this has to change. Some had been saying that before the debate in June. And then it became a drip, drip, drip. And slowly, you know, it gets easier when more people do it. But then once enough people looked around and said this has to happen, Nancy Pelosi said it has to happen, and others said it had to happen. Well, it happened. What if there is a fear that says we all respect Vice President Harris, but we know her polling. We know that it's all about 7 swing states. It's not about how people feel in New York or California. And we have to win those states. And pragmatically, that's all that matters. What if there's too much fear that says we don't know what would happen if we nominated a Gretchen Whitmer or a Shapiro or Andy Beshear or Wes Moore? But we're going to do it if we think it's right, and that's the only way to win this thing, even if it's scary, even if it could blow up in our face. Why not try the more dangerous path, even if there feels more risk, if there feels like there's more of a high ceiling there?
I think that people are going to make pragmatic choices. And the decision for vice president is always complicated. Some of it's about region. Some of it's about expertise.
I'm talking about even for president.
It's the reality now for me, and what it has been for me since the debate that sparked this entire conversation, is one of practical reality as someone who runs races and knows what goes into it. And at this point, we need someone who has the practical, on-the-ground systems that they need to run a race, to actually do it. You're asking people who forget that they don't have the money. There are people, like, if this was an actual race, who don't own shoes. You're asking people who don't own shoes to run a race. So we need to find the people who are best equipped to do this right now. Time is of the essence. I cannot stress enough that there is no time for messing around.
Assemblymember Meeks, your colleague here says the reality in this country is that it's going to be hard enough for a woman and a woman of color to win a national election. And probably, just based on the demographics and the way swing state voters are going to be, you probably can't put Gretchen Whitmer or Wes Moore on that ticket for that reason. Do you agree with that, Assemblymember Meeks?
Yeah, I do agree. I recognize there's some major challenges in this country. I do believe that, we it's just reality. Sexism and racism is alive and well. And I think we have to, you know, figure out, and I think that's more so the responsibility of the front runner as president to recognize who she believes will be the best candidate to run on her ticket as the vice president of the United States.
Okay. Assemblymember Bronson, same question. What do you think?
I think that, there's a lot of choices for vice president. I think it's important at the end of the day, it's going to be the top of the ticket that's going to win this, but you know, look, decision factors that go into that decision, you know, do we pick somebody from one of the blue wall states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan? Do we pick somebody that demographically will bring on voters, things of that nature? I mean, certainly Governor Shapiro comes to mind. I'm a huge fan of Pete Buttigieg. He can't necessarily deliver a state, but he's a young person and things of that nature. But the reality is, Kamala Harris, who I believe can do this, has to solidify her message. I think it's a message of hope. It's a message of unity. It's a message about protecting a woman's right to choose, a message about continuing to invest in our economy, making sure that we're investing in workers, and things of that nature. And then contrast it, which she's already done with a video that came out last night, contrast it with who Donald Trump is. He's a liar. He's a sex offender. She's prosecuted sex offender. He ran a public school that took advantage of individuals, she's closed public higher education schools down. He wants to be a dictator. She's going to oppose those approaches, including Project 2025. Yes, it's an anti-Trump message, but a younger person, anti-Trump, with a message that she does need to solidify. And then the other thing, I'll remind listeners, and I think you said it in the first hour, something like 35% of the electorate didn't want either Donald Trump or Joe Biden. And so we need to tap into those folks. And then lastly, I don't think he's going to get away with the sexism and the misogyny he got away with in 2016. I don't think that's going to work in 2024. And the racism that's going to be a part of this, we expect it. It's going to be part of it. But I think ultimately, that's going to reveal to the voters who Donald Trump is. And that is, he believes that if you're different than him, you don't look like him, you're not a white male, then you're not deserving. And I'm not sure that message is going to get through to more than, you know, his core voters. So I think this is a real winnable race with Kamala.
Before I turn it over to Assembly Member Lunsford, who wants to jump in, let me just say, Charles is fact-checking me. Adam Kinzinger is from Illinois, not Wisconsin. Thank you, Charles. Absolutely right.
Well, that changes everything.
Charles says he lost his seat because Illinois Democrats redrew maps and eliminated his district after they got what they needed from him. I don't think that's correct. I mean, I don't think that that's the best analysis of what happened. Adam Kinzinger disagrees with that, but it's a fair point of view. And he wants to say, Assemblymember Bronson, he's sending you some emails, and he's hoping that you will read them and respond. You all will read and respond, I'm sure. I'm sure you will. Assemblymember Lunsford, you want to jump into this too. Go ahead.
I think that Assemblymember Bronson made a really good point, and I like to remind people of this, that in 2020, more people stayed home than voted for Donald Trump. And this race with Trump and Biden, what we were seeing was, as much as Biden was down in the polls, in many of the polls, if you asked, you don't like Biden, but do you like Trump? The answer was no, I don't like him even more. There were people who were not going to vote in the first place that will come back to the ticket because of Kamala Harris. There are ways that she is invigorating that Joe Biden was not the least of which is that she can stay up past 9 o'clock at night, which seemed to be a real problem for a lot of people. We need to figure out ways to get this message out to say that we are here with a candidate that can win this race. And what you need to do is vote. They will win if you vote. People feel like their vote doesn't count. It couldn't count more.
Okay.
I would also like to chime in and point to the fact that, you know, in 2020, we voted for the Biden-Harris ticket. And his accomplishments are her accomplishments as well. And we have to recognize that as the vice president, she played a major role in the strides that we've seen in infrastructure in the United States, lowering the cost of prescription cost drugs, and the list goes on and on. But I think she is well deserving and taking credit for that work as well.
All right, Carol in Canandaigua has been waiting. Hey, Carol, go ahead.
Oh, I'm annoyed. Is that what you said?
No, I said you've been waiting very patiently. Go ahead.
Oh, I have been waiting. I'm also a little annoyed. But I'm one of those people who does not understand in these unprecedented times how Democrats can be on the fence. I don't. So I'm going to put that out there.
Okay.
I would love to understand that a little better, but I don't think it really matters. I also don't understand why women have to be likable. Women in leadership positions are often not likable. And we need to stop talking about that. We need to get behind Kamala Harris. No one is perfect. This is not the time to find a perfect candidate. And I guess I'm naive enough to say that I didn't realize this is a common thing in the Democratic Party, that we look for perfection, and unless somebody's perfect, we won't stand behind them.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Carol, if there was only a camera on Assemblymember Lunsford, the woman on the panel here, so I'll let you respond. Go ahead.
We hear it all the time. That, you know, I'll vote for a woman, but not that woman. There's always something wrong. And Democrats need to fall in love And if they're not motivated, if they're not energized, they don't show up. Democrats go to the polls and they say, "Ah, I don't know enough about that candidate," and they skip the line. It's infuriating because this is now more than ever a fight existentially for our country. I completely agree with you that I don't understand people who are on the fence. I don't understand people who were looking at even Trump and Biden and acting like they were equally bad. One of them is a convicted felon who has been found civilly liable for sexual assault, who may very well have sold state secrets out of a bathroom in his resort, and a guy who, you know, just wasn't quite as quick on his feet, got a little sleepy in the afternoons. The idea that these were equally bad candidates is beyond me, but this is what Democrats do. If we don't get exactly what we want, we go home, and we can't be like that.
Assemblymember Meeks, 30 seconds, final thoughts. What do you want to leave with listeners?
I want to leave with listeners that we need everyone to participate in this process, especially the younger generation. You know, the millennials, Generation X, we need folks to get out to the polls and show up and show out. And those who can commit, let's get on buses. Let's go to the swing states. Let's send postcards over to the swing states. Let's rally behind our Democratic nominee and get the work done on behalf of this country, because the truth is our livelihood depends on it.
Assemblymember Bronson, final thoughts.
Save democracy. Vote for somebody who believes in our country, somebody who believes in our institutions, somebody who, like Joe Biden, will put our American people and our country first. That person clearly is Kamala Harris. We have seen that is not Donald Trump, who refused to give up power the last go-round and now is following the script of Project 2025. We have a clear choice here. It's Kamala Harris.
20 seconds. Anything you want to add, Assemblymember Lunsford?
Vote. Vote, vote, vote.
Three members of the New York State Assembly in this half hour. That's Jen Lunsford, Harry Bronson, and Damon Meeks. Thank you to all three of you for making time for the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And from the whole team at Connections, thank you very much for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.